Folks, your financial freedom is at stake when the government thrives on creating unrelenting inflation, an astronomical debt, crippling interest rates, and market turmoil that we haven't seen in decades. And now you have an administration that wants to tax everything that you have to fund runaway entitlement spending. You should empower yourself with opportunity and the freedom to pursue success and to keep the fruits of your hard work. And if you want to protect your future, you should call a precious metals dealer that I trust, American Hartford Gold. They can show you how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by diversifying your portfolio with physical gold and silver. And all it takes to get started is a short phone call. And American Hartford Gold can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside your IRA or 401k. They make it easy. American Hartford Gold is the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Call today and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first qualifying order. Call American Hartford Gold today at 866-887-1188. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899.
Well, the timing is always coincidental, according to the Democrats at the Department of Justice. Look, here's what I know about Gal. Look, he was getting paid like the Bidens from CEFC. We want to speak with everyone that we can find who was also on the payroll of CEFC like the Bidens. And anyone who says we shouldn't take Gallup's allegation seriously discounts the fact that the Bidens wanted to share office space with CEFC, even going so far as to saying they wanted, that Hunter wanted to make an extra set of keys for both Joe Biden, Jill Biden, and the president's brother, Jim Biden. So this company that Gallup was working for, who he was getting paid for, is the same company that the Bidens not only were getting paid for, they were also sharing office space with. So we definitely want to hear more about these allegations, and we want to see the notes from the FBI meeting. They sent six FBI agents, according to Gallup, to Brussels to interview him. I mean, obviously, they were concerned about something he had to say. There's some level of credibility there.
Well, here's my question, and this is what I keep going back to. How in the hell does this guy get charged? This Gallup guy? How does he get charged with violating FARA and Hunter Biden not get charged? I mean, that's the million-dollar question here. How does this guy get charged and Hunter Biden, who violated FARA, how does he not get charged in all of this? And the timing on this, the way that it was handled, you know, I mean, I got some theories on all of this stuff. Welcome to the show. Dana Lash here with you. This godforsaken, humid as all hell, hellhole Tuesday in Texas. Golly, get your weather right. Don't mess with Texas in every way except property tax, weather, the border, all this other stuff. You're grouchy curmudgeon here with you. You guys know how to listen. I got links everywhere. I just kind of want to get in the meat potatoes. I mean, if you're listening, you're listening now. Do I really got to run over the whole list of everything for crying out loud? I don't really feel like every single day I just have less and less respect for the law. Because it's not enforced fairly. It's not enforced in any way equal with respect to, it's all politicized. You know, we hear all of this stuff about culture war and the politicization of everything, but who are the people that are doing it? I don't know that anyone on the right had any problem with following the law until they started seeing everybody on the left, you know, with their brothers and their, you know, uncles and family members and sons, everybody dipping their hands in. I mean, it's comical at this point and sad. And this is what undermines people's faith in the institution. So if you've been under a rock and you haven't been following just one of the most mindlessly blatant stories out there, it's the story of this this informant. This is one of the this was the whistleblower. Do you guys remember the whistleblower where everyone was like, oh, he went missing? You guys remember that? So apparently that's when this guy went on the run. So this Gallup guy, he was the guy who gave these officials, you know, all of this information. He was the whistleblower on the Biden family, right? And so he, when that story first came out that he, this whistleblower who hadn't been named yet, that he went missing. Well, he hadn't gone missing. He's on the lam because he knew that this was coming. I think that he knew that this was coming and he decided to blow the whistle on the Bidens, and then they turned up the heat more. And then when it came out that he was really cooperating with the House Judiciary Committee, that's when they decided that, okay, well, let's go ahead and charge you. He's a 57-year-old, this gal left, an Israeli professor. He's being charged on 8 counts of working secretly for China, trying to broker the sale of arms to Libya, Kenya, UAE without the necessary permits, and selling Iranian oil to China in violation of sanctions. They detained him in Cyprus, but then he fled while he was free on bail. They have no idea where he is. He came out with a video. He's not, at this point, I hope they don't find him. I really, because, you know, just throw it all to the wind. I kind of hope that they don't. He was the one who gave all this information about the Biden family business. So it's hysterical to me. Hunt, you can't sit here, you can't argue that Hunter Biden was not a foreign agent that went unregistered. He was a foreign agent. He was lobbying on behalf. I mean, for crying out loud, he's working with CEFC, the Chinese energy company that was co-founded by the CCP that wanted to share office space with the Bidens. And then he's on the board of Burisma and advocating for Ukraine's interest and merching out the vice president's office to do so. I mean, when you're trading influence, when you're selling influence, you're essentially a lobbyist. He was unregistered. I mean, Paul Manafort, who granted had other deficiencies. One of the charges that he was convicted on was being an unregistered under FARA, an unregistered foreign agent. They were trying to get other people on that. But Hunter Biden gets to skate because what? He was the lucky excretion from Joe Biden. So that gives him somehow, you know what, a little bit more privilege. I'm so tired of this white trash family just excusing themselves from any kind of acknowledgement of law. So this 57-year-old informant, they came out last night very ceremoniously. They're charging him. He didn't register under FARA. Fusion GPS, the entity that the DNC used to launder discredited oppo about Donald Trump back in 2016, they were unregistered. They're not a FARA entity. They literally were hired by Russian oligarchs to lobby against the Magnitsky Act to try to get that repealed. And they weren't registered under FARA. Did you see the DOJ going after them? Hell no, you didn't. You know why? Because it's D different. And the reason why it's not different with Gal Left is because Gal Left did a big bad no-no and he turned on the Democrat mafia. That's what he did. He told the New York Post in a video that was filmed from an undisclosed location. This was the video that came out towards the end of last week that he was being hunted because he had information about the Bidens. I think it's true. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he did something that was shady, but I also think that he's blowing the whistle on people who are doing things shadier. He met with the FBI agents in Brussels in 2019. And as Kane noted before, right when we went on air, I mean, that's how you know it was serious. They were like looking him up. They went to go meet him. He said that the CEFC, and that's the Chinese Communist Party controlled energy company, they were paying 6 figures to Hunter Biden per month. They were also giving a lot of money to his uncle, Jim Biden, because the whole family on the white trash Biden side, they're all grifting off the government. They're grifting off all these positions, however they can weasel in there and grift some more. Grifty McGriftersons, that's what they're doing. So prosecutors were detailing the charges. And they said that, he was advancing Chinese interests. Now, you tell me something. How does this guy work with Hunter Biden? He's charged with advancing Chinese interests. And Hunter Biden, again, he worked with him. He's not being charged with advancing Chinese interests. Oh, because you can't throw charges against Joe Biden's 50-something-year-old baby, infant, little, innocent, precious, nummy, num, num, Hunter Biden. Oh, my God. You can't do that because then he could relapse and he could go back on the cocaine that he had in the White House. What? So they said that he's subverting the foreign agent registration laws. He's promoting Chinese policies, et cetera, et cetera. Where's the charges for none of this matters at all to me whatsoever. And so Left said they're trying to get me with being an arms dealer. He says it would be funny if it wasn't tragic. I've never been an arms dealer. No, that's Biden. See, that was Biden under Fast and Furious. the op that he was running with Barack Obama when they decided, you know, here's a good idea. Let's take all these guns and see if we can sell them to drug cartels and then we'll trace them. Oops, but we forgot to put any numbers on the rifles. Oops, we forgot to trace any of these damn guns and we lost every single one of them. And it resulted in the deaths of two border agents and a bunch of Americans and a bunch of Mexican nationals. And then the left always tries to come out and say, well, didn't George W. Bush do that with Operation Wide Receiver? Yes, yes, that's right, you inbred moron. They did. But here's the difference. George W. Bush, when he realized how unbelievably stupid the program was and that they were having difficulty tracing the arms, they decided to do something which Barack Obama didn't, and that was end the program. Ta-da! You're welcome. There's your welfare education, you drive-by cousin lovers. Now, seriously, we share this continent with some of the stupidest people that have been put here to frustrate us. You know it's right. I don't feel any shame in saying it. It's accurate. There's nothing wrong with a truthful observation. So the guy who was convicted of bribery and money laundering back in 2018, Patrick Ho, he was Secretary General of CEFC. They partnered with Hunter Biden. They sent the Biden family millions of dollars. Hunter Biden himself, in a recorded conversation from his abandoned laptop, said that he was, quote, the blinking spy chief of China. But Hunter Biden, who worked with the blinking spy chief of China, literally worked with him, took money from him, he's not being charged. So at this point, I'm inclined to think all of this is a bunch of garbage. It's all just a bunch of garbage. That's what I am inclined to think. Because, you know, this whole insane story is all because the Bidens were marching out these elected offices. They were marching out these offices, making money, and then now they're trying to hide it. So this is the whistleblower. We got Jim Jordan on the show later today. And I got a lot of questions for him on this. But this is, we have every right to know exactly to what extent the Bidens were in business with China. I mean, we already know that Hunter Biden was helping them facilitate the acquisition of all of these rare earth mineral mines, these rare earth element mines like the cobalt mine in Congo, etc. All of that benefits the Bidens and their Green New Deal garbage. So I'm just curious, where's the equal application of law here? I mean, are we expected to take this seriously when you got, I mean, he was allowed to skate on a federal firearms charge. He's being allowed to skate on this. I mean, what else? Heaven on earth. So we got, we're going to follow this. We got a whole bunch more on this as well. And in addition to this, it took the media 1,326 days to recognize the Hunter Biden love child story. I know, right? I'm just saying, it's just so, so precious. It's really, really precious. As it relates to foreign policy, I don't know why we're acting like Turkey is an ally, but there it is. The White House is spinning this as a great deal. Oh, this is such a great deal. Such a great deal. Because Turkey's saying, yes, you know, we can go ahead and we will allow, we're going to green light the move of Sweden into NATO. It all has to do with NATO. You know, they had their summit over there. It's being presented as this big win for Joe Biden. And I'm looking at some of the way that they're discussing it, because they got Erdogan, the head of Turkey's president, backing Sweden's request to join NATO. And he's been resisting this for quite some time, by the way. But what did Biden have to give up for this to happen? Because, you know, we're apparently going to be sending a bunch of F-16s over there. That was a key point in the negotiations, apparently. But White House officials are trying to act like, no, that really wasn't. That wasn't a leverage point, really. I'm pretty sure that it was. Pretty sure that it was. So we're going to discuss this. Biden's apparently meeting with Erdogan later today, and we'll get into all of that. I'm sure they're powering him up. They're going to give him, because he looked really bad when he was over in Britain. He looked bad. So we got all of that. Cultural decline. 2024, law and order the disastrous EV push. I got some crazy headlines about that as well. So we got a lot of stuff to hit today, a lot of developments, and we'll follow all of this latest, all of the latest stories and all of this. Well, we'll get it all to you as we get moving, our partners for this portion of our program. When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes, and you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I don't like Jonah Hill's girlfriend. More on that coming up. There's a headline. Also, you can apparently hear silence. A new study says that brains actively process silence itself. So wait, does that mean like Simon and Garfunkel were ahead of their time? And apparently people thought one continuous silence was longer than two separate ones. I don't know why that was necessary to add. I just think it's, you know, you can hear silence is kind of cool enough as it is, but okay. That's cool. Also, the U.S. refuses to release details of that whiny ginger bitch, Prince Harry, and his visa. I'm going to say it because it's true. I mean, be grateful that I'm not being really honest with my feelings. The U.S. refuses to release details of Prince Privilege's visa application after drug use revelations, citing his right to privacy. Despite his worldwide privacy tour, his book, his like whole series that he wanted to do all about their lives, all of this, the 6-part Netflix doc with his wife, the briefcase girl, and the D-list actress who was a side bit on a Canadian show. Anyway, there's no right to privacy here. Yeah, there's no right to privacy for you here. You're not an American citizen. You don't get to claim that. Sorry. Go away. Apparently, the weather people are running away from the hottest day ever claim. There was a lot of media hysteria about this, and people were wrong. Of course they were. They had the Maine's climate reanalyzer. La, la, la. It was the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. They said, yeah, actually, no, we can't validate the methodology they used to get to that point. America's apparently the shark attack capital of the world. 72% of the world's total attacks are happening now here in the United States. You know why? Because people are jerks is why. There's all that wokery. The sharks are done with it, and they're coming to get you. And honestly, some of y'all deserve it. Not you guys, but, you know, some of the drive-bys. Vermont's bracing for catastrophic flooding. And the dam near their capital looks like it's going to fail. We got that and a lot more coming up. Stick with us. Folks, do you believe in our founders' vision for America? That our republic will only survive if we are an educated and informed people who know our rights and duties? Since 1844, Hillsdale College has sought to educate all who wish to learn about these timeless principles of self-government. For more than 50 years, the college has worked to spread that mission by sending Imprimis, their Digest of Liberty, to millions of Americans, including me. Imprimis features some of the best speeches given at Hillsdale events, and now an audio version of the popular Speech Digest is available in a new podcast of the same name. And like the printed publication, Imprimis the podcast is always free. You can hear the best arguments from speakers such as Christopher Rufo, Mark Stein, and Hillsdale College President Larry P. Arn, among many others, all read by Hillsdale students. Visit DanaForHillsdale.com to subscribe today and start listening to Imprimis today, all for free. To listen, visit DanaForHillsdale.com. That's DanaForHillsdale.com.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
Do you have any update on the investigation? investigation into the cocaine at the White House. The Secret Service indicated that they're closer to...
Yeah, I don't have any updates. As you know, as you just mentioned, Secret Service is under their purview. They're certainly investigating the situation. I just don't have anything updated. I would refer you to the Secret Service on that particular question.
Yeah, but you're the White House spokesperson, so you kind of speak on all those issues, which is why you're standing there at the dais and you're answering questions on it. I mean, that is your job, is it not? If you can't answer questions on it, why in the hell are you there? Why are all of those people assembled in that tiny little room with poor airflow and listening to you talk about things that apparently you don't have the purview to discuss? I mean, why waste everybody's time of getting everybody together and then like reading from them everything else that somebody put together for you in your binder? Either you have answers for people, I mean, as the White House spokesperson, or you don't. Either you're the White House spokesperson or you're not. It's something that happened in the White House. It absolutely falls under your purview to discuss as the spokesperson. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash here with you. And make sure you sign up for the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. Always good stuff that comes out. We've been following this story because the DOJ announced charges against the, not really missing, he's on the run, Israeli professor Gal Luft, who accused the Biden family of all of this stuff, selling the country out to the communists in China. And I am just amazed that this guy gets it, but not Hunter Biden. And that's one of the things that we've been discussing over this. They've been really doing a runaround. Not really, because I think what the FBI still has some of those tax forms that they haven't given over, correct? To House Judiciary. We're going to talk to the House Oversight. We're going to talk to Jim Jordan and all those about all of that later today. He's going to be up later in the program. But yeah, he wasn't missing. He just kind of went on the run. Like, oh, he's arms trafficking. He's not arms trafficking. Come on. That is weak. Apparently the DOJ briefed the Biden team on the allegations, but they excluded the IRS agents that were tipping off Oversight and Judiciary. That's according to Chuck Grassley. They were making sure that the Bidens knew what was coming, but they kept out all of the whistleblowers. They kept out, you know, the check and balance of Congress. And then you have Merrick Garland saying, oh, no, the DOJ isn't politicized. Like hell, it absolutely is politicized. What are you talking about? It absolutely is. A couple of things here regarding some foreign policy, because you have the NATO summit. That's why Biden's over there. Biden apparently is meeting with Erdogan today. He was posing with NATO leaders at the Crunch summit. Zelensky blasted the absurd decision to not set a timeline for Ukraine to join the alliance. You know, Ukraine actually had an opportunity to do so, and they kind of were dragging their feet. I mean, why does it's like sort of like insurance? You know what I mean? It's like you don't wait for your house to burn down and then say, gosh, dang, I guess I need some fire insurance for my house. That's not how this works. We're not going to put all of our loved ones' lives on the line because Ukraine could have probably, I mean, the West has been helping kind of drag this out a little bit. I know that there are some people out there who are like, oh, we got to get involved. It's kind of the neocon element of the right. They always like to write these checks and they expect everyone else's sons, daughters, husbands and wives to cash them with their asses. So we're not playing this game. But and it's not really, I really don't care what Zelensky thinks about it. Really don't care. But what I want to know is what did Biden give up to get Turkey to get on board with agreeing that Sweden can start the process? Because Turkey's agreed to back Sweden's NATO bid for membership. And he's dropping his resistance. I'm just wondering what it took to get him to agree to that. The NATO alliance's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg told reporters that Sweden will become a full member of the alliance, that Erdogan gave a clear commitment to move on Sweden's accession. Now, I will say Sweden's more of an ally than Turkey is. Turkey's not an ally. Why do people think that Turkey's an ally? Have you seen some of the stuff that they've done? I mean, every time that they don't get what they want, they turn around, they flirt with Russia. I mean, they're more of an ally. Sweden's more of an ally than this. I know that makes some people mad. I have some friends that very much disagree with that. And that's fine. They can be wrong. I'd agree with them, but we'd both be wrong. And somebody has to be right. So I'll take that yoke. It's okay. But I will say this whole... I mean, Sweden, they've I mean, they've been more of an ally, and they've done more, I think, with regards to Russia and the whole purpose of NATO, et cetera, than you've seen Turkey. We're going to keep an eye on that because I'm just, it's all still ongoing. Like I said, he's meeting with Erdogan. I'm curious as to what had to be given up, though. We're apparently sending a bunch of F-16s, although the White House says that that wasn't a leverage point. You believe that? I don't. I think that it absolutely was. So they said that they're acting like it's a big win for the Biden administration. He needs a win. He needs a win in the headlines. He needs a win to stave off Gavin Newsom. Have you seen Gavin Newsom? He started making a little bit more noise yesterday. Have you seen it? He's still running that weak presidential campaign. He's still out there. He was talking about, look at this, like quote unquote gun violence, all this other stuff, etc. He was out there talking about all of that yesterday and still running his weird, like he had that Politico piece that came out Monday, came out yesterday as well, where they were saying, oh, he's a star and he's bringing his whole constellation. He's there waiting in the wings, this plan B. So Biden needed a win. He needs some kind of foreign policy win. So I want to know what had to be given up to get Turkey to get on board, because they previously opposed it. Was it the F-16s, the sale of the F-16s? Is that what it was? Will we ever find out? I don't know. Do we even know where our money's going in Ukraine? I don't think so. I don't think we will. Now, speaking of some 2024 stuff, I think people need to stop freaking out over DeSantis and the campaign. After all of these stories that I saw from the left about Casey DeSantis and all of this, and apparently the governor clapped back, I think is what New York Post says, after they were saying that she was Karen. He was like, she's a strong lady and that threatens the left. I think it absolutely does. I think it absolutely threatens the left. They go after her appearance. They go after, you know, everything else. And that's, and all the people who do it, they sound so bitter. But there's something I want people to realize, though, too. We are over 6 months away from like the first ballots being cast in the earliest primaries and caucuses. As I said yesterday, if you go back to like 2012, the leaders in the race at that point were people like John Huntsman. Really worked out well, didn't it? Like John Huntsman, the Jeb Bushes, the Scott Walkers. And I know that there's some in the media, and I think some in the Trump campaign, that want that to be the timeline of the DeSantis camp. But I think that there's some bad narratives out there. And like I said, I'm always very transparent. But at the same time, I'm going to call balls and strikes when I see them. And for instance, like some of the stuff that I was looking at with all of this, where they people are looking at polling and fundraising. And the fundraising I'll get to in a moment. But I was looking at some of the polling. There is an issue, actually, with some of the polling, especially some of the stuff that's being used to make a lot of these headlines. I mean, when I look at polling this early out is garbage. It's absolute garbage. Unless you're looking at isolated, like a state by state, I really don't put a lot of stock into a lot of the national polls, because a lot of it is very small sample size. A lot of them, you know, when you look at the data on it, it's, and look at the way the questions are asked, it's a push poll, meaning that it's basically you're guiding the people to get the answers that you want. But the small sample sizes, like for instance, and I've seen a Fox News poll that also had DeSantis way in the lead. And I'll say the same thing about that poll too. Like there was one poll that had like barely 380 something people. That here's the problem with some of these small polls. Like there was this Fox poll and there was one that showed Trump in the lead, one that showed DeSantis in the lead, one that showed DeSantis enthusiasm. None of these polls actually would make the cut for the RNC committee for debate inclusion because of the small sample size. So this is what you got to be really careful of. Your attitudes on all of this are being shaped by BS polling, much like the media tried to do in 2016 and 2020. Like, for instance, there was a USA Today poll that was talking about GOP. You know what the sample size for that was? 245 people. I have the link. By the way, all of this is going to be included with receipts. This is the big draft piece that I've been working on all week. I've been breaking all of this stuff down and looking at all of it. This was a Suffolk University USA Today poll, and it was taken in early June. 245 people. 245 people. That's their sample size. And then they take it from, you got to look at sample size, then you got to look at where they're surveying these people from. So for instance, if you get a Northeast Republican, that's a way different Republican than an Alabama Republican. Am I correct? It's rhetorical. I know I am. If you're depending on where you're taking it from, and the sample size can mean everything. You can get an entirely different narrative. So that's why you got to be very suspicious of some of this stuff. There was an NBC News poll, 500 sample size, a Quinnipiac poll under 700, a CBS News poll under 570. Now, what ends up happening is you'll get some of these polls that start with a sample size, and sample size meaning that's the number of people that they're serving, and they might start with 1,000, but then they got to dwindle it down, you know, if they can't get a hold of someone, or if this doesn't, you know, if you're trying to end up with like a sample size of 800, then you have to basically cast a wider net, and that's really expensive to do. Now, there's internal polling, which campaigns do, and they actually, I think, approach that in a very, very unbiased way. But it's called internal because they don't release those numbers. Sometimes it gets leaked out. Sometimes it doesn't. But state polling so far is pretty sparse. In fact, just since May 10th, there have only been 6 polls in Iowa, 4 polls in New Hampshire, 4 polls in South Carolina, and there's only been 3 in Nevada. And by the way, out of all those polls, only 2 meet the RNC's requirements, because the RNC's requirements to get on the debate stage is you have to have X amount of polling, up a certain percentage, and it has to be X sample size, all of this stuff. There's a lot of requirements with this. Democrats have their own set of requirements. So none of this polling actually would do anything to help any of these candidates even qualify for the debate stage. But they're trying to use these polls to shape your perspective. Now, one of the things that they're trying to do, and everybody's trying to do this, I would, is they're trying to say, oh, well, let's look at these polls. And you have some firms, you have some third party firms that are basically surrogates of different campaigns that try to do the same thing so that they can get this, they can establish this headline. Oh, so-and-so has waning enthusiasm, or so-and-so is, you know, this or that, as a way to cast shadow on the validity of a candidate or the legitimacy of the candidate. And or the ability even of the candidate. And I've seen a lot of this stuff. And I will say this is one of the things that the Trump camp is good at pushing out there, because, you know, you have the Bannon Breitbart site, and I used to work there. You have a lot of different ways to do that. But the truth of the matter is, especially when you look at some of what has been out there, like, you know, where it concerns some still smaller polls, but I think the sample size and the demographics and where they're taking them from are a little bit more insightful. I mean, there's particularly in swing states, you have, you know, the GOP frontrunner, as is right now, not doing well in a lot of swing states. So you got to be very careful about some of this stuff. Misinformation doesn't just happen on the left. And I can tell you this as someone who has worked in media, golly, like my whole life. And I've worked in, you know, I'm a commentator. I just tell you my opinion and we hang out. But I'm telling you, I'm seeing this stuff, and this is what's happening. There's a narrative that needs to be created that certain candidates are just not, you know, they're just not going to make it. And the press is helping. So that's one of the notes on the polling that I want to share with you. I don't know why people are freaking out so bad on the DeSantis stuff with this. It doesn't make any sense. And on fundraising, it's not even a question. The DeSantis, they raised $20 million in half of the second quarter when he was a candidate. And then you got his PAC out there raising money. The Never Back Down PAC raised $150 million separately in quarter two. $83 million was a transfer from the gubernatorial campaign. But now this is one of the things that a lot of the conservative Bannon type media are pushing. Oh, $83 million of that was a transfer from the DeSantis campaign. Okay, then explain the $67 million that was raised independently. That's when it gets trickier for them to explain. So it is a very good result, and the fundraising is really, when you're looking at early numbers and early measuring, the fundraising is where you look. That is what you can rely on, because those people who are doling out money, that's, you can trust those people. So that's, looking at fundraising is the way to measure. Now, we'll look at a couple of other things later on, but I think people need to just chill. It is so early out. Like I said, it's like 6 months out from casting the first ballots for primaries and caucuses. So chill.
Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle Ready-to-Drink Coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Turned on by Biden's anger. I am too. I like it.
You like it?
I do.
Well, you have said that before.
I like that. I mean, he's such a mild-mannered, sweet guy.
What? In God's name.
I don't think anybody wants to hear Joy Behar talk about being turned on by anything. Oh. I mean, we have a... I think if you did testing as to what's affecting, you know, low testosterone in men, that's the answer. That's it right there. It's her. That's horrible. It's like she's a kryptonite to testosterone. It just... Nobody wants to hear what she's turned on by. I just want you guys to know my self-restraint over the years. I've honed it. Because I am thinking of perhaps the most inappropriate comment that I possibly could make in all of my years of broadcasting. I'm not going to say it, even though it would entertain me to no end to watch Kane freak out and to hear Steve knock everything off the console reaching for the dump button. But
thank you.
Just going to say, so program directors across the country, you can calm down. I'm not going to say anything.
Appreciate
but I am thinking it. Do you want me to do our special mute trick, Kane?
What?
You want me to do that?
We do have a little time.
I'm just saying, you know, because, well, I'll wait. Because you're definitely going to read my lips. That's the people watching the simulcast. It's bad, man. It's bad. But I just don't think anyone needs that. So that's our, sorry to make that. Ugh. It's like, what is it? The gross jobs that was on television? Right. Like having to work with her, I think, would account for that.
Dirty jobs.
Yeah, having to sit there at a table with her. I think that counts for a dirty job. I thought the alpaca thing was probably cleaner than that. We have another hour on the way. Don't go anywhere. The big EV trick, the latest with foreign policy, so much more. Stick with us.
To be clear, the governor almost exclusively appears on friendly conservative outlets. And even there, as you can see, he doesn't seem happy with the questions. As for his claim, it's the media who don't want him to defeat Donald Trump. Polling shows that it's actually a plurality of Republican voters who don't. The most recent CNN polling shows him trailing the former president by 21 points.
Yeah, let's talk about the sample size of that CNN poll, because I'm happy to. That's one of the polls that I went and looked up the other night talking about some of this. The media definitely wants to determine who is going to be the Republican nominee. And your job is to guard against that and make it your decision, not theirs. Welcome back to the program. Top of the second hour, Dana Lash here with you. Yeah, they want to make sure, they want to be the ones to make that determination. But the problem with that CNN poll, this is one of the ones that I was, their sample size is only 561 people. And of that, it was taken mostly from the East Coast. This was the overview, SSRS, Research Defined. It was conducted between June 13th through the 17th. And this was one of the ones that I broke down. And I was looking at the crosstab data for this, and just, it's the questions, the sample size, like I said, is small, tiny, and the geographical area of where the most people were pulled from. But then here's the thing, as I said, it is ridiculous to sit here and base any kind of determination on a poll like this, because this poll, in order to even be considered for competition to enter the debate stage for the RNC primary debates, you have to have individual, you have to poll at least 1% or over in three different individual polls where the sample size is starting at 800 and it has to be likely Republican voters. So there's two counts that the CNN poll that he just cited doesn't even matter in any of this because it wasn't Republican voters strictly. It wasn't likely Republican voters and it didn't have the 800 minimum sample size. Furthermore, I would even contest that it's the area from which they pulled these people. They want to sit and influence you as to who your nominee is going to be. Welcome back to the program. Like I said, Dana Lash here with you, your lovable curmudgeon, here at the top of the second hour on Tuesday. And a lot of people, just some of this 2024 stuff that I want to put to bed. I got a post coming out about this later this week. I've been working on it on and off for a couple of days because there's a lot of research that goes into it. Because a lot of this stuff, I'm like, you know, is anyone actually doing, like, really looking at some of this stuff? Like with that video cut right there. And it's true. What DeSantis said is true. The media wants to impact all of it. Just like they wanted to impact 2020 and just like they wanted to do in 2016. So what, all of a sudden you're supposed to believe that it's different this time around and that it doesn't matter? I don't believe that. Do you? No. So that's a huge, huge, huge issue. So we've got to make sure that we're, you know, the press, like I said, they're helping. I saw this piece over at, the New York Times piece. Let me pull this up. New York Times, they're trying to say, oh, this campaign is struggling to find its footing. I don't think so at all. Not even in the slightest. I mean, not in this. Here's, you could say, and the way that it is in polling right now, yeah, Trump is leading in national polls, but you know what? There's no one else that comes in really third. Nobody. I think Vivek Ramaswamy is trying very hard to make sure that he qualifies for the debate coming up to keep it that 1%. In three separate polls. So far, they don't have them. And there's only a handful of candidates actually even qualifying that would qualify for the debate right now. And those have been, you know, pretty long kept requirements. Like I said, Democrats have their own as well. But one of the other things that you're not hearing, and I'm just, again, I tell you guys who I like, but I also call balls and strikes. And I'm also going to tell you the very clinical lay of the land with this stuff. When you look at the Real Clear Politics poll tracker, I mean, when you look at the RCP average, and then when you look at there's not really a lot of state-by-state polling yet. It's still, like I said early on, we're 6-plus months out from the first ballots even being cast in the primaries and caucuses, all of this. I mean, we're some time out here. But the big issue here is that when you look at the polling and when you look at enthusiasm and then when you look at who gets independents and moderates plus the base and you look at swing states, then the lead changes dramatically. You've got to take that into consideration as well when you're looking at any kind of data. It's silly to say, oh, we're only going to consider this, but we're going to eliminate any consideration of, you know, this. Because that's the stuff that ultimately is going to come in. That's the stuff that's going to come into play. That's really it. The process of narrowing all of this down has not even started. Voters aren't even super engaged yet. And that's normal. That's the normal timeline for this process. And as they become more engaged, you'll see more campaigning and you'll see the debates, etc. But, you know, in addition to polling, you cannot ignore also the fundraising aspect. And I was talking about some of this later on as well. And I think, as I always have, one of the best guidances for strength this early on is fundraising. It's a big deal. And that is, I mean, you're looking at, I mean, there's, DeSantis has been blowing everybody away with fundraising. So that's something that you got out of the first 6 weeks, it was 20 million. That's crazy. The first 6 weeks was 20 million. The Super PAC took in 130 million. And as I was saying, and I think it's fair to say, and this is a point that the Trump camp has made, they're like, oh, well, some of the PAC came in was a transfer for, from the gubernatorial campaign, 83 million of that. Yeah. And that was noted in the quarter two report. but $67 million was raised entirely independently in that exact same quarter, which is more than double what the Trump campaign had raised in the second quarter. So you have to acknowledge all of it. You can't just take some and cherry pick what you're going to use as your measure of, you know, who's, it's so early on and anything can happen and anything can change. But there's, don't believe the narrative that, oh, well, this campaign doesn't have its footing, or it's, you know, they haven't found their voice, or it's already DOA. I've seen some of these Republican operatives say this. By the way, I don't trust any operative out there whose ass I didn't see in the streets alongside mine during the Tea Party or during the fighting with the Clintons or during, you know, fighting with the IRS Tea Party stuff or pushing back against Too Big to Fail with W and all this other stuff. But all of a sudden now you see some of these grifters come up and you ain't never seen these people in the streets with the if you're too good to serve, you're not good enough to lead. I see y'all in your nice suits and your nice dresses, but I never seen you in the streets with people. I never seen you at no phone banking at 8 a.m. with the unwashed masses. That's the establishment, by the way. That's the establishment. Make no mistake. Now, we got a few other things to hit because this is just one of them. One other thing on the primary stuff is the Senate. And I want to make sure I touch on this adequately. I was going to include this in the draft that I'm doing on 2024 and all of this stuff. But I think I'm going to have to do it as a separate piece because there's, you know, a tiny handful, like what, 4 Senate seats that Republicans are going to absolutely need. Or sorry, 3 that to win control of the Senate in 2024. There's a really good piece on this over at Legal Insurrection, too, by the way. Arizona, West Virginia, and Ohio. Super important. Kyrsten Sinema, she's an independent. She hasn't said officially whether or not she's going to seek re-election. There's no GOP challenger yet. There is a Democrat, a representative, who is seeking the Democrat nomination for Senate. Now, I don't, like others, I really don't have a problem with her being a Democrat. She's not like a Nancy Pelosi Democrat. I mean, yes, you'd like a Republican in there. But sometimes, I mean, you end up with a Mitt Romney type Republican. So I'm just curious. So this, it's gonna be interesting to see how that race shapes up. I mean, is she someone who could caucus with Republicans? I don't know. I think she's too moderate or too much, or leans maybe a little bit too much to the left to do that. But we'll see. West Virginia, Joe Manchin, for the first time, may actually be in trouble. And that's because of the whole thing that his fight with Chuck Schumer. Do you remember the fight that he had? Let me pull this up. When he was trying to hold out. This is the climate bill. It really wasn't about climate, right? Didn't reduce the Inflation Act of 2022, raising taxes. He was trying to get some, a couple of things. He wanted like some, you know, energy stuff in there for him. And he ended up caving. And that really made a lot of his base in West Virginia upset, especially when they started seeing the new taxes that they were going to get hit with. The Schumer Manchin deal. Because, I mean, it's the one thing that, do you remember the carried interest aspect of it? They wanted to have carried interest. It limits carried interest to the tune of $14 billion. And that was something that Manchin and Sinema had been united on. And then Sinema had said that she was not going to support it still because of that. And apparently Manchin went MIA. So he's kind of burned it with a lot of his base. He hasn't made a mistake in terms of how to navigate the field as a Democrat in a red area. But I think he finally has with this. So that makes him vulnerable. And according to some of the latest polling, he looks a little vulnerable here. So you have those seats, the Arizona, the West Virginia, and then you have the Ohio seat. Let me pull this up. Because those, I think, depending on how they want to, I think it could be flipped. You have Sherrod Brown, who's just he's a jackass. He really is. The first time I ever met him, I was going to ask him a question and I introduced myself. He got into my face and screamed at me. This was at Netroots in Rhode Island. He screamed at me. Spittle was on the corners of his mouth. And he's like, I'm not answering any of your damn questions. Screamed in my face. So I don't really have, and there were tons of witnesses. I think it's actually on YouTube. I really don't have a high opinion of him. He's a jackass. So he announced that he's going to run in 2024 and he wants to win. But I think I think one of the reasons why he's vulnerable is because he doesn't stand out. I mean, to most people, you know, he's just, I think if the Republican Party wasn't screwing up right now, that it would be a lot easier to get him out of office than not. Which brings me to my other point here, because this is the problem that we're looking at here. This was a good piece that was on PJ Media. State Republican Party committees are in disarray in key states as 2024 nears. It is a very troubling trend that has emerged in a number of key states, and it's going to cause a lot of trouble for candidates that are facing off against Democrats. So you have the Republican Party in Michigan, Nebraska, and Arizona that are facing some serious turbulence, and in Oregon, they've had a lot of infighting. They've had dismal fundraising. They have had a dismal attempt in trying to build the grassroots team that is needed to counter what Democrats are doing. And that could actually cost major. I mean, that it could affect more than just House and Senate seats. I mean, that's something that could impact a presidential election, especially in Arizona, where we're talking about cinema just now. Like, for instance, they're apparently in Arizona, their Republican Party can't pay their bills. Over at Arizona Republic, John Gabriel reports the Arizona Republican Party is down on its luck. They're hanging on to one vote majorities in House and Senate, and they're going to have trouble in 24 if they don't get their finances in order. They had less than $50,000 cash on hand as of March 31st. Do you see? The Republican Party needs to get its stuff together. And I understand primaries are good, but this phallus measuring contest between some people, I ain't having it. I'm done with it. Also, you know, just to vote for one candidate is a forfeiture of 8 years. You're only going to get four.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So the Titanic 5 apparently knew of their fate for a minute before the vessel popped like a balloon, according to experts. This 3,000-foot nosedive. They were pretty much piled on top of each other in total darkness as the craft descended. The rapid change of pressure would have caused the catastrophic implosion, but they said that they knew what was going to happen for about at least a minute before it happened. The experimental sub had just a 14% success rate on deep-sea expeditions and had only reached the depth of the Titanic on 13 out of 90 dives. Yeah, Bank of America ordered to pay $250 million for opening fake accounts and charging illegal fees. Huh, they pulled a Wells Fargo. They agreed to pay $150 million in fines, $100 million to customers for opening unauthorized credit card accounts, improperly charging extra fees and withholding rewards, according to U.S. regulators. Consumer Financial Protection Bureau fined the bank for, quote, systematically double-dipping on fees imposed on customers with insufficient funds in their accounts. And Afghanistan beauty salons are being ordered to close, erasing the last way that women had to actually talk with each other and earn a living. Good job, Taliban. Good job, Biden. Stick with us. We got more in store.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
It's past time for the Senate to consider the National Defense Authorization Act. We have an obligation to ensure the U.S. military remains the world's preeminent fighting force, capable of deterring and defeating enemy aggression. The Senate will have an opportunity to lead our allies by example as soon as the Democratic leader brings NDAA to the floor.
So this is the big battle that's happening actually today in a committee vote, and that's, we'll kind of see, you know, I guess how that shapes up. That was a Senate Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, that you heard. Welcome back to the program. Dana Loesch here with you. Bottom of this second hour. You can listen coast to coast, stream the show, watch the simulcast, YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. The National Defense Authorization Act. That's what you're hearing. NDAA. Not like an NDA. This is the big this is the thing that they're going back and forth in this debate today. Because they have the National Defense Authorization. It's coming up. They have to get some bipartisan support to pass this for fiscal 2024. And the it's been described as I'm kind of aggravated because the way that the media is writing about this is they're trying to attach a culture war aspect to it, but as a pejorative against Republicans, because it's an $886 billion defense policy bill. But yet Democrats are insisting that things like abortion, like taxpayer funded abortion on demand as birth control for military, unnecessary, quote unquote, gender affirming surgeries for troops who say that they're transgendered, DEI chiefs and all this stuff. That's all part of it. They, Democrats, have demanded that all of those things be included as part of it. And so that is what has been the holdup in what previously has always been a pretty easy bipartisan vote of support, right? But when you add all this stuff in there, I mean, you can't seriously expect people to fund things like, oh, I don't know, you know, like paying for abortions as birth control for troops, or to pay for surgeries for troops who, like a dude who wants to identify as a woman and wants to have, you know, his Frankenween changed. I don't know how else you want to feel real. What does that have to do with the National Defense Authorization Act? I mean, it's rhetorical because the, you know, the answer is that it doesn't. So they get to decide today what amendments are going to make it to the floor. So they have, one of the things that's already in there is the elimination of a chief diversity officer. That language is apparently already in it, but what they're going for is the elimination of any and all DEI funding. You know, the diversity, what is it?
Equity.
That's what it, I can't even remember the stupid alphabet garbage anymore. My brain is just like jettisoning all of it out. They want to prohibit any kind of additional DEI funding, right? They want to cut funding for the gender transition, which it's you're not changing your gender. You're chopping up your bits, surgeries. They also want to include a block so that taxpayers are prevented from paying for soldiers seeking abortions and covering their travel expenses. And they also want to stop the incessant renaming of all the bases. So that's it. And so the press is accusing the right of pushing a culture war when it was the left that fought to include all of this BS in, which was into what was previously a completely innocuous bipartisan bill. So whose problem is it? That's what's so frustrating about this. Like, let's talk. I mean, we've been having conversations about woke military, have we not? We've been having conversations about woke military. And the whether or not that is eroding any kind of advantage that we have over any kind of enemies. It's a real thing. So I'm just, I don't know what, I can't see Democrats willing to gamble, all of them anyway, on, oh, we couldn't have this funded because we wanted to make sure that we had gender transition surgeries for these, you know, soldiers that identify as trans. But, you know, what do I know? Maybe they will. The left has gotten kookier and kookier. And the propositions that the GOP have come out, they've already been slammed by the White House. The White House says it's, you know, they've taken issue with the anti-wokery. They said, oh, it's going to end funding for critical race theory programs. Yeah, that's kind of what it's, yeah, and they've been defending the Defense Department's diversity. You know what? I want to keep that diversity because it includes the diversity, equity, and inclusion. So that's what happens when I try to say those three words all at once. Diversity. We're saying it.
I love it.
So from now on, let it be known, it's not diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's diversity. So the Defense Department's DiversQuity programs, they've criticized Republicans' attempt to eliminate all of that. They got really mad because some of the amendments that Biden hates are the amendments that ban drag shows in the military. Like, I'm not talking about the Bob Hope kind of stuff. I'm talking about the gyrating, let's shake your bits into people's faces, treating it like a strip club kind of stuff. The ban on federal funds for the critical race theories, et cetera, et cetera. The chief diversity officer thing that already, I read one report where that's what they're pushing for, but then I've read another report where that language was already agreed to and included. So I don't know. Maybe that they thought that was the least that they could do. I don't know. But their defense has been, we rely on diverse perspectives, though. What does that have to do with taxpayers having to fund for somebody's abortion on demand as birth control? That's kind of what we're looking at also. What does that have to do? I mean, it doesn't. It's, you know, the whole thing. Can you imagine? What if we had another World War III? How in the hell would we be able to prosecute a war when we're dealing with all of this stuff in the military? I mean, they actually would hold stuff up because drag shows for kids and because of the gender surgeries. It's one thing to rely on the strengths of different groups and utilize that for the benefit of the whole, which in this case would be the fighting force. But that's not what this is. This is social experimentation at the expense of military readiness. That's exactly what this is. I mean, you kick ass and you break stuff. That's your job. What does this have to do with any of it? You're going to get... I go back to that Mark Milley thing when he was talking about reading about white rage. It's like, how does that prepare you to go and fight? How does that prepare you in dealing with China? How does that prepare you in dealing with, you know, any kind of threats? What does that do? Good grief. I mean, this is, it's weakening it. It's weakening. Getting lectured about DEI, that has nothing to do with American security. Nothing. So all of that, as I said, they are debating these amendments to see what's going to make it to the floor and what doesn't. So that's the National Defense Authorization Act and the House Rules Committee. And this is going to go through a process. They're going to decide today, like I said, what amendments make it to the floor with this thing and what doesn't. And then they'll go from there. So it's going to be a little bit before, you know, you have that determined. So I wrote about this last night. And I read the Instagram post. So, you know, we mentioned it briefly yesterday. So, you know, UFC 287, you had Mel Gibson, Joe Rogan, and Guy Fieri saying hello to Donald Trump at UFC 287. And then Jack White, can I read you his full post? It is so snotty. This is what he posted on Instagram. Jack White of the White Stripes. He wrote, quote, anybody who normalizes or traits this disgusting fascist racist con man, disgusting piece of burp Trump with any level of respect is also disgusting in my book. That's you, Joe Rogan, you, Mel Gibson, you, Mark Wahlberg, you, Guy Fieri. This is a statement from me, not a discussion or a debate. Jack White III. So he took to his own little personal burn book, his own little Instagram account. And he bravely wrote this. He's so brave. Mucho brave. I love his self-important. This is a statement from me. And my opinion is too precious to subject it to the test of a debate. I love that. Oh my gosh. There's this. Not enough of you, by the way. I've been watching Letterkenny or Shorzy because there's this one phrase that I really want to repeat right now that I would totally get fined for. So if he wants to identify as this like ideological bigot who reduces people to their political affiliations, I mean, that's his choice. But he can't make the choice for other people as to whether or not we want to debate it. I mean, how insane is it that we live in a world where you, like, other people think they can call you on the carpet because you said hi to somebody? Like, in this case, it's the former president of the United States, and make polite conversation because you're a human who was taught manners and you weren't raised in a damn barn, right? To make polite conversation at a public event. So I think so far everybody's ignored him. Jack White, me, me. My opinion is precious. Me, me. Icky thump. Me, me. But really what they should say is, yeah, and it's the former president of the United States, and I, being not a douchebag, said hello. Take a Midol. He does need to take a Midol, for real. He really should. Just the audacity. These people who are like, I saw you acting like you weren't raised in a barn. You said hello to this person. Oh my gosh, you said hello to him? I'm going to go to Instagram. I, Jack White, am so precious. I thought rock stars were like anti-establishment and badasses. He is a giant female copulatory organ. When did that stop ruining rock and roll by being a giant female copulatory organ, Jack White? Stop it. Papa Midol. Maybe go get you some Chardonnay. Sounds like you're one of those bitches that need it.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. So this story comes to us from the Villages. That is the Villages News, ladies and gentlemen. Anytime you want to. There it is. Wait, you got to clap. Got to do the clap. There you go. So a man fled his home and hid in a nearby bush after a woman armed with a machete threat. By the way, would you be shocked if I said this is not the only machete story I have? After a woman armed with a machete threatened to cut off his genitals, a Marion County Sheriff's Office deputy responded at about 2 a.m., you know, because nothing good happens at that time, to the couple's home in Summerfield. The man was carrying his infant daughter. He was out of breath and soaked in sweat. He said he was sleeping at home when 44-year-old Dahlmarie Hildebrandt went through his phone. She smashed the phone and began screaming at him before she grabbed a machete that they just apparently conveniently had nearby in their bedroom and threatened to cut off his man bits, said the report. The deputy found the machete in the living room of the home. Hildebrandt fled prior to the arrival of the deputy, but a second deputy spotted her. She claimed that her man friend struck her and that she was on her way to the sheriff's office substation to report the incident. She said she was not in possession of a machete. But it was weird that she was, you know, on her way to the substation, but she was like walking in the shrubbery and the bushes and everything else. Her mugshot's wild. So she was arrested, charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, booked at Marion County Jail and $25,000 bond. So don't be doing that. Don't do it. Now, there's also another machete story, literally days apart. North Fort Myers, Florida. What is with this? It's the weapon of choice. A woman chases a man with a machete at a Florida gas station. This was on Sunday. WBBH reported that Michelle Monte Zuniga, 48, was yelling at a man at the racetrack, okay, in North Fort Myers, that he wasn't allowed to be there. Now, the man had previous run-ins with a woman, and so he got on his bicycle and left the area, according to the report. Now, would you be shocked if I told you that Monte Zuniga then got in her car and followed him to the sidewalk with her car, him on his bicycle, got out of her car with a machete and swung it at him? I am disappointed in whoever did not get video of this. She was charged with aggravated assault, according to media outlets. So he tries to run away from her on his bicycle. And that, yeah, doesn't really. Okay. Let's see this. Oh, man. Hold up. I got a couple of them. I was going to read that one, and I just realized how inappropriate that one was. No. Second. Oh, here's a Florida-related story. The Biden administration is going to consider a $20,000 fine in prison for boaters who exceed 11.5 miles per hour in the Florida Gulf. Wait, what? They say the speed limits exceeds the authority of the federal agency. That is what several legal and industry groups. They say that actually you can't do that. This is like in the entire Gulf. They want to have a 10-knot speed limit for boats in the Florida waters of Gulf of Mexico. And they want to make it a felony if you exceed it, a charge punishable by a $20,000 fine and up to 1 year in prison. What? They said, well, it's going to protect the endangered Rice's whale. The Rice's whale. That's what it will. It'll protect. I mean, do you really speed past a whale?
I don't know.
I think most people would stop and be like, whale. But also at the same time, that's like a pretty, to go out that deep, you have to be in a lot bigger of a boat, right? I don't know. I just think that that's a little ridiculous, right? I mean, I only know, I have done some boating in my life, and I have commandeered some boats in some foreign and domestic waters, but I'm just saying that sounds like it's a little bit of a, Three Florida men were charged with trafficking meth after cops found them asleep in a storage unit. James Richard Greer, 56, his son, Hunter James Greer, 29, and Matthew Stephen Bostrom, 33, all at Key West, were charged with trafficking meth, possession of meth with intent to sell said meth, according to deputies. They also, apparently one of them also provided a false name originally to law enforcement. It was Storage Rentals of America. They, people sleeping in a rental locker, they were all inside. They all had the meth, the scale, the baggies, the pipes, all of it. It was all strewn about the little storage space. Stay with us. We've got third hour on the way, and Jim Jordan will join us.
When he heard that Joe Biden was going to be running for president, that alarmed him because he knew how compromised Joe Biden would be. So he met with two prosecutors from the Southern District of New York and four FBI agents in Brussels for 2 days in March of 2019. What's interesting about those individuals, one of the prosecutors from the Southern District of New York is the same prosecutor that prosecuted Patrick Ho, the money launderer that paid Hunter Biden $1 million to defend him. And in that trial, he prevented the name of Biden's from being brought into court.
So that's Senator Ron Johnson. He's talking about the Israeli professor Gal Luft, who was just yesterday, that's the announcement that came out, was indicted by the DOJ. And they are discussing whether or not he should be granted immunity to testify before Congress about all of the criminality that he witnessed with the Biden family. Welcome back to the top of this third hour. Dana Lash here with you, your lovable curmudgeon. We have a Jim Jordan. He's going to be joining us later on, Congressman Jim Jordan, with the head of House Oversight. He Comer, all these people have been leading the charge on this. And there's been, because the story is so weird. I mean, this was the, Luft was the whistleblower that, you remember the story that went missing, and then people were saying that he wasn't missing, and it was very confusing. And well, that's because he knew, I think, that this was going to come down. And they charged him with being an unregistered foreign lobbyist under FARA, the Foreign Agents Registration Act. And so that's the charge that they're trying to get him with. And he's on the run. He had a video that was in an undisclosed location that he had sent where he was talking about the criminal activity of the Bidens. But it's just very interesting timing that this they decide to do this. And it sounds like it was kind of rushed a little bit. Like they could have charged him earlier, but they didn't for some reason. I just think it's very interesting, the timing of all of this. But he's the one who blew the whistle. Now, maybe it's one of those situations where he knew that this charge was going to happen and that he had worked with the Bidens and then realized that he was going to get charged and decided to just, you know, as a finger in the eye and do this anyway. I mean, who knows? But that's just the reality of it as it is now. It's just really weird to me. And then you have this crazy story where this whole situation, we're going to talk to Jim Jordan about this, U.S. Attorney David Weiss. Now, if you guys have been following this, he's a Delaware, he's from Delaware, U.S. attorney, and he had sent this letter to Republican lawmakers. He sent it to Lindsey Graham, and some of the questions that they're asking is whether he sought authority under federal law to properly and, you know, fully investigate and prosecute Hunter Biden. And he was asked to provide some clarity, right, to discuss, you know, was he denied any kind of special counsel authority? Was he considering bringing charges against Hunter Biden in D.C. or California? Because that's what the IRS whistleblowers had alleged. And that apparently there was a contemporaneous email that substantiated the allegations that they had. And Weiss sent a letter in, and it still wasn't entirely clear. So, there seems to be like a little bit of conflict here. And Grassley had said, well, you know, whistleblowers said that there were investigators prevented from seeking information about Joe's involvement in Hunter Biden's criminal business arrangements, and that their efforts were frustrated. And this was IRS was saying that it was Assistant U.S. Attorney Leslie Wolf who was repeatedly obstructing the federal investigation into Hunter Biden. And so IRS, those two whistleblowers, they were saying that it was Delaware federal prosecutors that were concealing that FD 1023 form. Remember that form? That was the one that the FBI had, which that gave details about this, you know, huge bribery scheme, this millions and millions of dollars bribery scheme. And that it was former Attorney General Bill Barr who had, when he was, I think, I can't remember what interview it was, he was giving an interview and he confirmed that it was his department when he was a DOJ that actually referred the document to the U.S. Attorney's Office in Delaware. And so that is, you know, they're saying that they were, that Leslie Wolf had been FBI special agents from the Pittsburgh field office, et cetera, had briefed Wolf, and that with respect to the FBI generated FD 1023, Grassley wrote to Weiss, the meeting didn't include any IRS agents. And he was asking, did you seek federal authority under this to bring charges? Were you thwarted, basically? And the letter, though, Weiss was entirely unclear. The Federalist published part of the letter. And he wrote, quote, to clarify an apparent misperception and to avoid future confusion, I wish to make one point clear. In this case, I've not requested special counsel designation pursuant to the statute, says the letter. I had discussions with department officials regarding potential appointment under said statute, which would have allowed me to file charges in a district outside of my own without the partnership of the U.S. attorney. I was assured that I would be granted this authority if it proved necessary. Okay, so then the question is, well, was it necessary, and who makes the determination that it was necessary? Well, that was part of the lack of clarity in Weiss's letter. He didn't say anything else about it. Was that Garland? Was that Merrick Garland? Does he make that decision? Because if it was, then remember Garland told everyone that this was an independent investigation into Hunter Biden and that he was not involved at all. And that he was there was no politicization of it. So that would completely destroy that claim. So who was it that decided whether or not it was necessary? That's one of the questions that have to be answered. And Weiss also, because the whistleblower said that he told the other supervisors in the case that he was not the final, ultimate decision maker in determining all of this. And that's what the IRS whistleblowers were saying. So he didn't answer any of that. I've got a million questions. Did he lie to his staff? Like, what is, you know, we got a lot of questions here. Now, Jim Jordan had said that David Weiss says that he wasn't denied. The IRS whistleblower testified the opposite was true. Are we trusting Biden's DOJ, to be honest here? And that's what he's asking. So there's a lot of questions here. I was reading some of the report from this, the FBI collaboration, blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, I don't know. And then, of course, we have Ray, who's going to be testifying before House Judiciary this week. It was reported on Thursday, but I think it's tomorrow. Is he testifying? It was said he was going to be before House Judiciary Committee on Thursday, but I think it's tomorrow. And so there's a lot to cover because they're going to also talk about the cluster bomb stuff. And I'm sure they're going to touch on the Durham report. And I had there's going to be a lot of stuff that I'm sure that they discuss. Like, you know, does he agree with the conclusions that the Durham report reached? Does he agree with Durham's conclusion that there was insufficient evidence to open the Crossfire Hurricane investigation? Does he believe that the FBI violated Carter Page's civil rights? Does he believe that the FBI defrauded the FISA court? There's a lot of things here. One thing I want to point out, and I actually made mention of this to my husband like a couple of days ago, for all of the discussion about the completely compromised bureaucracies and agencies that we have in our federal government, there is one thing that I want you to note. Because as much as I rail on the IRS, it was two whistleblowers in the IRS is the reason why we know about some of this with Hunter Biden. And it's some of the whistleblowers within the FBI, which is the reason why we know about a lot of that. So my point is to say that there are serious problems with these agencies. I still maintain that I don't believe the IRS should exist. But I do think that it's because there are some pretty brave people who see some things that don't jive with how things are supposed to work constitutionally, legally, that are blowing the whistle on it and are saying enough's enough. And they're doing this under threat of penalty to themselves. So while the departments may be rotten, not everyone on the inside is. So I think that's important to note, because we wouldn't know about that investigation. A lot of the information that we know, some of the very pertinent information, without those IRS whistleblowers. And they are going to the mat and they're saying, look, there's some shenanigans happening here. This was thwarted. And they're naming names. So that's important to note. Now, does that mean I want the IRS to continue existing? No! But do I think that everybody in it is trash? No, I don't think these guys are. These whistleblowers, I don't think they are. And it's really important to note. You do have to have some good people in government, even if not every government agency is needed. Government, you know, a small government, the way that it was intended by our founders. I think in order to have the existence that our founders had envisioned, it is, you know, a necessity because, I mean, in the Federalist Papers, unfortunately, men are not perfect and not without sin, et cetera, but you get what I'm saying here. But it is, you know, it's just kind of interesting. Very interesting indeed. Yeah. And those whistleblowers, as Kane notes, their lives are going to be destroyed on this. Their lives are going to be destroyed. So it's, I think it's to give credit where it's due there. So this is all important stuff. We're going to talk about this with Jim Jordan here coming up, because Ray's going to face these critics. You have this witness that's been charged now. He was out on bail and then he fled to Israel, and that's apparently where he had made, I guess somewhere in Israel is where he made his video. So we'll see. Now, a few other things I want to make sure that we're hitting here on all of this. We were talking about the National Defense Authorization Act, which is incredibly important. I wanted to make sure that we didn't miss it. We have been discussing, the EV thing. I have the EV thing, and then I have this story of, I have some immigration stuff, and then I have a whole thing that we may run out of time on. How I think the Jonah Hill, I don't know if you've been watching that story. It's a cultural story, but it talks about how stupid I think it is a living diorama of cultural decline. I think it's like the best way I can put it. I don't even like Jonah Hill. What all has he been in? He's an actor. He's been in a couple of movies. His ex-girlfriend sounds like a bitter Betty because he dumped her and then he moved on and she sounds mad. So she's like trying to showcase all their texts and try to paint him as this big abuser. Do I think that he's annoying? Yes. Do I think that he's probably kind of a jackwagon? Yeah. Do I think that he's a lefty moron? Yeah. But do I think that he's an abuser the way that she's saying? And no. Do I think that she's a scorned ex-girlfriend who's taking advantage of the last vestiges of hashtag Me Too to try to sit here and pull one over on her ex? Yeah, I do. There you go. There's the story. That's it.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So now it's being reported by Sky News that President Biden is not attending tonight's dinner with NATO leaders. Asked why he's skipping it, a U.S. official said that the president has had four full days of official business and is preparing for a big speech tomorrow in addition to another day of the summit. Okay, he literally, though, was at the beach. Literally. And I saw these photos while we were all, you know, over the weekend. And I'm like, wait a minute. So I went and looked it up. New York Post. He was having fun in the sun with First Lady Jill near their Delaware home. And he was at the beach, legit in the sand, reading a book at the beach. And Kane insists that it's a body double and that it doesn't have the same markings on the arm as Joe Biden does. Oh my gosh. So I just think it's weird. And that's not four. How does he have four full days there already? It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. So I don't know. I got some questions. So that's the first thing. Also, Sarah Silverman, this is an interest. I'm not a fan of hers, but I do think that this case is interesting. She's suing OpenAI and Meta for copyright infringement. So the lawsuits are alleging that the companies trained their AI models on books without permission. One of the things to understand about a lot of the AI stuff, whether it is generated text or whether it's generated images, is that these, the AI, the software, the algorithms, everything actually uses what is existing as a way to make up its artificial consciousness, if that makes sense. And so it's being argued that were it not for these existing works, then the OpenAI wouldn't be able to actually come up with its own, its consciousness, and it would be different. Its artificial consciousness would be different. And so they're saying that that is an infringement on existing work, which actually kind of makes sense when you think about it. Consider the one, you remember the little girl that Occupy and the BLM and Antifa and all that stuff, that statue that they were going to put across the street from the bull up in the financial sector of Manhattan, and she was like making a face at the bull, and the artist who designed the bull had actually filed suit and said copyright infringement because without his work, her work changes, and they found it in his favor. So I just find that, you know, there's some of this stuff that actually does make sense. This is going to be a very interesting work for lawyers, though. Let's see, a mom's unique baby name, Quitifer. Sparks a online debate. Quitofer. It's awful. She asked on Reddit, I'm thinking of calling my daughter Quitifer after my grandparents, Quinn, Florence, and Christopher. I've gotten, because it's a stupid name. It's equivalent of child abuse. Quitifer? You're stupidifer. Stop it. So dumbifer. Gosh, just, it's like putting gate after everything. Baby gate, all this. And USPS. Apparently, they have 452 packages of unidentified created remains. Let Brown do the work for you. We have Congressman Jim Jordan next.
Whether you just want to stay informed or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world, make sure to download the Dana Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Weiss has said he can't talk about it because it's an ongoing investigation.
Well, he's going to have to.
And what are you guys going to do to compel them? Are you going to
suspend
them?
I think you cannot sit back and hide behind and have an attorney general say one thing. You say something else in private. What do you have to hide? Wouldn't you, first and foremost, why would you wait so long to respond even? If you knew this was a question, if you knew because of the attorney that you were, because you worked for the attorney general and others, and that it would rise to such a constitutional question, why wouldn't you step out the first day and say, I got nothing to hide, let's talk about what was said. This was right or this was wrong. Why do you want to mince words inside a letter itself and be delayed? That just raises more issues.
That's Kevin McCarthy talking about this U.S. attorney by the name of Weiss, who's pushing back on some of these, well, the concerns that have been raised by the IRS whistleblowers looking into this however many years long investigation now into Hunter Biden's or an absence of an investigation, maybe is the best way to put it, into Hunter Biden's criminal activities, his financial activities. I mean, there's a lot of criminal activities there. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Bottom of this third hour. Listen coast to coast, terrestrially. Stream the show or watch the simulcast, Channel 347, DirecTV, YouTube, Facebook. Joining us right now, Congressman Jim Jordan, beautiful state of Ohio. Of course, he's been one of the people leading the charge against this. And you were tweeting about this earlier, I saw as well, Congressman. You said that David Weiss says he wasn't denied special counsel status in the Hunter Biden case. The IRS whistleblowers testified that the opposite was true. I just went over all of this for our listeners last segment. Your response on this, because I don't trust the Biden DOJ.
Well, Gary Shapley, the whistleblower, is very, very credible. And this is a 14-year veteran, handled some of the biggest international tax evasion, tax fraud cases. And he was the guy selected for this. He was like the man when it came to this area. And he says one thing and the U.S. attorney says the other. Who are you going to believe? And particularly now when you think about this Justice Department, all we've seen. He also says, David Weiss also said, oh, I could bring charges in the Central District of California if I wanted. I can bring charges in Washington, D.C. Really? Gary Shapley says the opposite. So someone's not being square with this. And again, I think the whistleblower seems entirely credible. In fact, he's been retaliated against. The Department of Justice kicked him off the case, kicked him off the investigation. So look, we want to talk to Mr. Weiss. We want to talk to the assistant U.S. attorney, Leslie Wolf. We want to talk to 11 other people, 13 people we'd like to talk to. Let's make that happen, Merrick Garland. Let's let that happen. And God bless the speaker for pressing on this. We need to get the answers for the country because it's supposed to be equal treatment, one standard, equal treatment under the law.
You brought up Merrick Garland because one of the letter that he had sent, apparently, that Weiss had sent, I think this was a letter that was sent to Grassley's office, and because Grassley had asked whether or not Weiss sought any federal authority under, you know, the statute to bring charges against Hunter Biden. And, you know, Weiss was really unclear. And he was saying that he said, I have not requested special counsel designation. I had discussions with department officials. The Federalist reprinted the letter from Weiss on this. They said I had discussions with department officials that would allow me to file charges. I was assured I'd be granted this authority if it proved necessary. So the question that who decides if it's necessary?
Right. Right. No, we don't know. That's a question we want to ask him. Because frankly, we don't know. That's one of the many questions I think we have for
Garland?
For Mr. Weiss. Well, I think in the end, it's got to be the attorney general. It's always the way it works. It was the attorney general who actually stepped aside. And then it was Rosenstein who stepped in and said, oh, I'm going to make special counsel, the Mueller special and counsel. So it's always the top people at the Justice Department who make this decision. Here's what's interesting, too. We initially wrote Merrick Garland about concerns we had a couple months ago. We wrote the attorney general, but he didn't respond back to us. Mr. Weiss did on behalf of the attorney. We've never seen that in our time in Congress where that took place. And it was in a pretty quick turnaround. Normally these things take forever and there's a back and forth. But we wrote to the attorney general. He doesn't respond. It's actually the U.S. attorney from Delaware who did. So there's been all kinds of unusual things go on here. And who makes that decision? Who made that decision? I think it's ultimately the attorney general. One of the questions we want to get an answer to.
Which would completely invalidate the claims that he had made. He had a big show of it. You remember that press conference where he goes out and says, you know, it's a completely independent investigation. We are not in any way, you know, trying to thwart this investigation. I don't have any hand in it. He was saying that it wasn't politicized at all. Well, this would completely contradict that and then raise the question, well, what else have you politicized?
Well, we know, according to the whistleblower, that the assistant U.S. attorney, Ms. Wolf, she's tipping off the Biden lawyers when the investigative team are doing interviews of people involved in the case. She also told the investigators, Mr. Shapley and others, when you ask people, when you're interviewing people as part of your investigation, don't bring up President Biden. Don't use the term the big guy. Well, why those parameters? Why those instructions given to the team doing the investigation, particularly when you're talking to Mr. Shapley, the expert in this area, the guy who's handled these big cases in the past for the agency, makes no sense other than there's a different standard being applied.
Right.
And I say all the time, 4 out of 10 Americans think there's a problem at the FBI. 6 out of 10 Americans think there's a double standard. They think that because there is. They can see what has happened at the FBI over the last few years. That's why we got a lot of important questions for Chris Wray tomorrow when he testified.
That goes right into, he is testifying tomorrow, Christopher Wray, talking to Congressman Jim Jordan, because there's a lot of questions, I'm sure, with Christopher Wray. Like, I'm fascinated to know whether or not he agrees with the conclusions of the Durham report. If that's something that, if he agrees with those, if he thought that the FBI violated, you know, the rights of people like Carter Page, if he thought that there was enough evidence to open Operation Crossfire, because I don't think we actually have clear answers on that yet, Congressman.
Well, I think there wasn't clear evidence, according to Mr. Durham. What Mr. Wray thinks about that, he'll just tell us, oh, we've implemented more training, we have more safeguards in place, more procedures, more protocols. He'll say that. Really? Because since you've put in all those safeguards and protocols, we know that over 204,000 times there were queries done to the Section 702 database, which is part of the FISA law, queries done that were done in an illegal fashion. So I don't know that all the training and protocols and procedures are working based on that particular fact. So I think that's what he would say. But we know for certain, according to Mr. Durham, as you know, Dana, that there was no predicate, no probable cause, no reason whatsoever to launch that investigation, Crossfire Hurricane. And they violated all the norms. They ran it out of headquarters instead of out of the field office like they're supposed to, and a bunch of things they did wrong, lying to the FISA court, and on we could go. So, those are some of the questions he'll get tomorrow, too, is relative to how the FISA law needs to be changed, because we're not going to reauthorize FISA Section 702 in its current form. No way.
Good.
No
That's
way are we
going
to do that.
That's good to hear. Talking with Congressman Jim Jordan. He's going to be talking, questioning Wray tomorrow as he goes before to testify. I wanted to ask you, get your reaction about this story that came out. I was looking at this, the tweet that the DOJ put out yesterday where they brought charges against Gal Luft, the one whistleblower. That was a very interesting timeline. Like, they said he was missing, but he wasn't missing. I kind of get the sense that he knew what was coming. So he decided, you know, this, it all came out, you know, because he was anticipating this. But how is it that somebody like this guy can get charges against them under FARA, but yet Hunter Biden, whom apparently he worked with, who was also working with China, is not registered under FARA? He got another law he gets to skate by?
Yeah, so they go after this guy with on a FARA violation. And as you point out, they were both working for this Chinese energy company, CEFC. So again, one of the mysteries of how this all our Justice Department works and this two-tiered system, this double standard system, who knows? But there are so many things why were they so reluctant? Why won't Chris Wray let the country, I mean, the whole Congress, let alone the country, see the 1023 form? We had to see it in a redacted form. Only members of the committee on the oversight committee can see it. It's like, there's so many problems here. And first, they wouldn't even tell us whether it existed or not. So there's a host of questions about this whole investigation. That's why Gary Shapley and another whistleblower have come forward. And of course, I think what's really interesting is they've been retaliated against. The same Department of Justice is doing all these things. They're the ones who kicked Mr. Shapley, the expert in this area. They kicked him off the investigation. So that'll be, I think, a line of questioning for some of our members tomorrow as well.
Considering the nature of the way that these charges were brought against Luft, do you think that this is just more retaliation by the DOJ?
I don't know. I mean, we may get into that tomorrow. I think more of that will probably come from the Oversight Committee. But there's just so many things that, again, I always come back to. There's a reason why a majority of the country thinks there's a double standard. And it's sad because it's not supposed to be that way in our great country. The greatest country ever is supposed to be equal application of the law, equal treatment under the law. And we're just not seeing that. And that's a big concern.
Now, we're seeing these agencies, whether it's the FBI getting involved in the Pittsburgh investigation. I mean, we're seeing, you know, FBI Secret Service intervene in all of these different investigations regarding this White House family. And, you know, meanwhile, my goodness, nowadays, if you're going to sell something on eBay or Etsy or do any kind of Venmo transaction and you're above the $600 limit, the IRS will come knocking on your door. But then they'll penalize somebody for blowing the whistle on someone like Hunter Biden for the financial activities in which he's engaged. There is a double standard. Last question for you, talking with Jim Jordan. Is there going to be some kind of immunity for Luft or some of these whistleblowers that are coming forward? Because I made mention that, you know, I obviously think that, you know, I have issues with a lot of these departments, but there are some good people within the departments that are bringing this information out. And that's why we know of it. Is what's being done to make sure that these whistleblowers are protected?
Well, we try to highlight the issue because, again, the retaliation comes from the agency that they're coming to tell Congress about. We can't give them any kind of real immunity. Only that can come from the executive branch, the Justice Department, if there's any type of, you know, solving some crime. But we're gonna continue to highlight Garrett O'Boyle. Garrett O'Boyle was selected for a special unit. He came and talked to us about a number of issues. Garrett O'Boyle, FBI agent, selected for a special unit. They fly him across the country, move all his belongings. The day he lands here in the D.C. area for this new unit he's been selected for, because he's done great work, they take his clearance, they take his pay, they take his kids' clothes. They don't even let him get access to his belongings, for goodness sake. He had to use his own money. It's like, this is how they come after you if you dare to tell Congress and, more importantly, the American people about what's going on. God bless these people who are willing to do it.
Yeah, they're having their lives ruined for telling the truth to the American people. We appreciate your efforts to make more and more people aware of it. Congressman Jim Jordan, we're going to be watching tomorrow. Sure to be fireworks. I'm sure we'll play some of the clips on air. Thank you so much. It's good talking with you.
You too, David. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
Well, the president and I feel very strongly that we should not be burdened by things the way they've always been. We should be looking to what should be. And so the fact that Secretary Holland is the first Native secretary in a president's cabinet is because we believe that representation should occur. It should happen. And so that's the work that we are doing.
What? We should not be burdened by the things the way they've always been. We should be looking to what should be. What?
Sure is a smart one.
I mean, at some point, Is she not aware that people make fun of her saying the same stuff over and over again?
She has to be.
Does she? I mean, I'm...
It doesn't stop her.
I know, it hasn't stopped her, but I saw this last night, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Again? Like, somebody make her aware of the stuff that she's saying, for the love. Just make her aware. Ugh. So we will have our discussion with Congressman Jordan up on YouTube. And then tomorrow, we'll keep an eye on all of this stuff with Ray. But I do think, you know, the two things that kind of stand out to me. The first is, you know, Weiss, two separate occasions, was completely ambiguous about who determined whether or not it was necessary for him to bring an independent, you know, a charge. And the second is that how you have someone like Gaul Luft, who worked just like Hunter Biden did with the CCP, and because of that, he's hit with a FARA charge. And FARA stands for the Foreign Agents Registration Act, F-A-R-A. He is hit with a FARA charge, and Hunter Biden isn't. I mean, Hunter Biden, I mean, they established a firm that worked in partnership with the CCP, and they helped the acquisition, facilitate the acquisition of coal, one of the biggest cobalt mines in the world, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, for China. And he's not hit with a FARA charge. Now they sit here and go, oh, well, he wasn't actually like a total owner of that firm. No, he just made millions of dollars off of it, according to the publicly available data about his, you know, his financial dealings that we know of so far, because that's totally customary to make millions of dollars off of something that you don't work for, right? Shut up. I mean, we're not all as dumb as the rest of these Bidens. Come on. I just get so aggravated at this. But, you know, ultimately, I think too, the claims, the protestation from Merrick Garland that he had no part in this and this is an entirely independent thing is garbage. It's false. And I think particularly the Weiss thing proves that. And they keep trying to go, oh, but it was a Trump appointee. It was a Trump appointee. And that doesn't mean anything. And all that means is that Biden was leaving himself a little plausible deniability so it could look like he was trying to be independent where it pertains to investigating his son. That's all it does. But if you believe that everyone that was appointed by Trump or has an R after their name is completely incorruptible, then I got a bridge to sell you, Mitt Romney. Good grief. I just get so tired of this stuff. So tired of these stupid excuses. This is why people don't have faith in their institutions. But kudos to the people who are allowing, I mean, they're getting their lives ruined. And you heard Jim Jordan, they're not able. I mean, they don't have anyone in the DOJ that's going to provide these people with immunity. And they're doing it, you know, at a time when they're not going to be able to get immunity. Can you imagine how much more would, you know, if we actually control the DOJ with all the stuff that we know now, how much more would come out?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's why 2024 is important. And we need 8 years, not just four. All right. Today in stupidity, Kane.
All right, there's really a lot to choose from today. I'm not kidding. I was going to do Joy Reid because she thinks that Twitter would just collapse if she left Twitter.
Oh.
That's so stupid.
Sweet.
So stupid. But it's actually going to be Morning Joe. He's blaming the war in Ukraine on, guess who? It's Trump.
How?
That's the guy that says, oh, I could end this in a day. As Zelensky said, he had hundreds of days to end this ongoing conflict since 2014. He never did it. In fact, he did just the opposite. He actually blocked Congress initially when they were trying to send weapons to Ukraine.
What is he talking about?
He didn't block them sending
weapons.
In fact,
instead of the blankets and cotton balls that Obama sent.
Yeah. And also, let's remember when it all kicked off in January after Biden assumed office.
Yeah.
So, wow, time is tough for him. He's getting up there. So, yeah, I can imagine it's hard to be sentient. Back with you tomorrow, folks.